Hello, my dear curious friend. Welcome to another episode of the Curious Pavel podcast sessions. Today, I'm bringing you an episode that I promise. Well, we promised with Jack. We did Tudor London, where he shared 5+1 buildings from the Tudor area here in London. And we're back with Georgian London. Is it 5 or 5+1 for this episode as well? Well, wait and see. Or in this case, listen. Here's Jack with another episode. Hello, Jack. Thank you so much for joining us for yet another episode. How are you doing today?
Very well, thanks. Thanks for having me back.
It is a real pleasure, Jack. You are the type of people I really want to have on the podcast over and over again. The reason for that is, one, you're knowledgeable. Two, you're super positive, my friend. Look at that. You're always coming up with your smiles like, yeah, let me tell you about London, this and that. And I cannot say no. I know it will be always a great pleasure to have you around. So I'm really thankful that you found some time to join for the second episode.
No worries. My pleasure.
Excellent. So we're going to be talking about Georgian London. That's correct, right?
Yes, Georgian London. We talked about Tudor London last time, so I thought we'd do Georgian.
Plus, we had a couple of comments, and I got a couple of messages as well. Do the Georgian London, and I told you as well that I'm excited. I told you as well I'm excited to learn about Georgian London because I don't know that much. And in the spirit of the last episode when we did 5 Tudor places in London, we're gonna do 5 Georgian places in London today. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. I've tried to do a bit of a mix in terms of types of building and stuff. So hopefully we'll have a good discussion about it.
I feel so safe in your hands. I feel so safe. I know that the journey you're going to take us to, it's going to be a blessing. All right. So I don't know if you're ready. Shall we begin? Before that, this is Jack. He lives in London. He moved to London. He's really curious. He goes to various locations as he's, he writes about them. He's asking questions. If you want to know more about Jack, you can go to the previous episode where he shared more about himself, or you can go to his website, and the link is in the description. Okay, I just thought I'm just going to shoot that very quickly. Okay, location number one, where are you going to take us?
So the first location is Somerset House, which you probably heard of because it's quite famous.
I heard of it. I didn't know it's from the Georgian era.
Yeah, I mean, so there's been a Somerset House there since the medieval period. So there was essentially a medieval palace there, owned by the Duke of Somerset, hence Somerset House. Uh-huh. But the current Somerset House was built in 1776, so in the Georgian period. So when we say the Georgian period, we're pretty much talking about the 18th century, so 1700s. George I comes into power in 1714. And then it's the four Georges, the four George kings, first, second, third, and fourth. And this Somerset House was built in 1776 in the reign of George III in the Palladian style. So as you can see, if you're watching the video on the screen, it's very classical in its design. So neoclassical with influences from ancient Greece and ancient Rome with the columns and the statues and that kind of thing. And this was a very popular style of architecture.
So can you break down for us Palladian style? What does that mean?
Yeah, so it's basically inspired by ancient Rome. So it has, it's very symmetrical, it's often got columns. So if you think of the British Museum, for example, mm-hmm. that's not in the period we're talking about, but that's in the Palladian style. So it's got the columns out the front. It's got the, I can't think of the right name. But the pointy bit at the top, my architecture knowledge isn't quite as strong. Yeah. If you get a picture, there you go. So kind of like a Roman temple, basically. Uh-huh. That's the That's the style. And you get that in Somerset House as well. And so basically, in the Georgian period, Britain and London become huge. They become very, very powerful, wealthy on the empire and trade generally. London becomes the biggest city in Europe. So by the end of the 18th century, it's got a population of 1 million, roughly. It almost doubles over the period, actually. And basically, they wanted a government building that displayed their newfound wealth and power. And Somerset House was the result of that. So it housed lots of government departments and that kind of thing. And actually, in the courtyard, you'll see a statue of George III dressed as a Roman emperor. So the Georgian kings actually quite liked doing that. There's a statue of George II, I think, in Golden Square in Soho, again, dressed as a Roman emperor. It's kind of that, almost that obsession with ancient Rome and ancient Greece and antiquity coming through. But also it's about displaying, again, their power and their right to power and their rights to the throne, basically. It's a very interesting statue. He's standing over a figure of the Thames as well, which I think kind of shows them displaying their power over London and over the river and trade and that kind of thing. That's Thames at the bottom there, Father Thames.
So why is this obsession with Rome and Italy?
There's two things really that I can think of. So people started going on grand tours of Europe. So the upper classes and rich people basically started traveling around Europe and brought back those influences in architecture and in other areas as well. In terms of the Georgian kings, why they particularly like displaying themselves as Roman emperors and that kind of thing, I think it's, for me, it's about them asserting their rights. So George I only really comes to the throne because he is a Protestant. So there was Queen Anne before him, who died childless. She didn't have an heir. And they basically they wanted to make sure a Catholic didn't get on the throne. So they plucked out an obscure Hanoverian prince from Germany to be king. He was very far down the line of succession, really. So I think it's about them trying to solidify their claim to the throne and linking back to these ancient ideals and that kind of thing is part of that.
Okay. So basically, what got my interest here is that in the end of the 17th century, tourism started to boom.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. People start going on holidays in Europe, essentially.
Interesting.
But it was the fashion that they'd travel around and particularly go to places like Rome and Greece and see all the ancient ruins and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Somerset House is really nice place, especially in the summer when it's hot. You know, if you pick one of those 3 days that is super hot here in London in the year. And then you just go there and these fountains, you know, water, you know, going everywhere. I mean, it's really nice, really refreshing, really nice place to go to. It's quite central.
A gorgeous spot. I think the first line when I mentioned Somerset House in my blog post is that if you're there when it's sunny and you're in the sunlit, flooded courtyard, you're almost transported to ancient Rome or somewhere like that, or somewhere on the continent to a grand European palace. But yeah, they've got nice little cafes in there now. They've still got some of the, it's a big sort of creative community there now. They get about 3 million visitors a year. They put on exhibitions and that kind of thing. It's a very nice spot.
Oh, well, that's lovely. And let me just quickly share my screen. I just want to show a quick map because the first time I went over there, and it's just next to a busy road, like really busy road. And then when you go through it, you know, there's some sort of arch. What was the entrance? It's also some sort of arch or something. Then when you go through it and you end up on that massive square and just like, you're right. The way you describe it, you just transport yourself in a different era. And it's like, wow. You know, this is remarkable. So yeah.
Yeah.
Visit it if you have a chance.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's a really, really great place for people to visit. I think very impressive.
It is. It is. And it's hidden. Okay. So location number two, what do you have for us? That was a good start.
Thank you. I thought it linked in nicely with talking about the Georgians generally as well. So that's good. My second one is Rules Restaurant in Covent Garden.
Oh, never heard of it. Did you say Rules?
Rules, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know it. It was actually mentioned on the Covent Garden podcast I had.
Was it? Yeah. So you'll know then that it's the oldest restaurant in London.
Yeah, that I know, yeah.
So it started in 1798. And this is kind of really where you get the birth of restaurants as we know them today, somewhere where you go in and sit down and be served and that kind of thing. And this is indicative of the period that you get a growth in the middle classes and sort of from the increase in wealth and trade and all these luxury sort of interesting goods coming in from around the world and that kind of thing. And Rules is still going. So it's still an independently run restaurant. So it was in the Rules family until 1918, before passing to the Bell family. And that's quite an interesting story because basically I think Thomas Rule is in my head. He, in 1918, after the war, wanted to move to Paris. And he just happened to meet a guy called Mr. Bell, who wanted to move to London, who had a restaurant in Paris. Mm-hmm. So they essentially swapped restaurants.
Oh, wow.
So it's quite an interesting, turn of events. Very lucky for both of them.
So, but they swapped restaurants, but they kept the name here in London.
They kept the name, I guess, because it must have had a good reputation already by that point, and they wanted to hold on to it. But it's had a long list of famous clientele. So obviously being located in Covent Garden, it's right by the theatre district and the posh areas of St. James's and all that kind of stuff. So Dickens was one of their famous clientele. I mean, Dickens has been everywhere, to be fair. Arthur Conan Doyle apparently ate in there. But its most famous one is... the future King Edward VII, so Queen Victoria's son, Prince of Wales at the time. This is where he met his mistress, Lily Langtry. And there's a table for two, a secluded table for two in there that you can go and eat at still now, where they had their rendezvous.
Okay. Interesting.
So yeah, that's Rules Restaurant.
Okay, Rules Restaurant. Yeah, it's in Covent Garden, which, to be fair, is not super far from Somerset House, isn't it?
No, close. Yeah. If you were to want to walk between all of these, you probably could quite easily.
Cool. Okay, that was number two. What is number three? What is hidden behind door number three?
It's like a game show.
Yeah.
So the third one is another very grand building. It's Burlington House, which now is host to the RA, is probably most well known for. I mean, there's other sort of societies and things like that in there as well. So again, similar to Somerset House, there was a building there before, built in 1664 as a private mansion. So if you look at it now, it's amazing to think that it was someone's private home. Yeah, absolutely crazy. But it was remodeled in 1717, which brings it nicely into our period. And this is actually probably the first or one, at least one of the first examples of the Palladian style. So again, linking back to Somerset House. So the Earl of Burlington, I think he was an earl, was very keen on this style and was one of the key people that brought this style over. That's a very nice, big, grand Georgian building. The Georgians are associated quite a lot with their grand buildings, so I thought I'd include that one. What I also wanted to talk about, actually, was Burlington Arcade just next door, which is
Before you go to Burlington Arcade, is this building... just next to Piccadilly Circus?
Yes. Yeah, it's on Piccadilly. Yeah.
You know, it's so funny. Like, I was looking at the building here on Google, and I couldn't recognize it. As soon as I opened the square inside, I recognized it because I have been inside. I remember seeing
it. Yeah.
But from outside, I usually try and look around, you know, browse, like understand, you know, get understanding what's happening with the buildings. I am ashamed of myself. How I could not recognize it. God damn it.
I feel like, you know, you can be forgiven. There's so much in London and so many grand buildings. You can get them confused quite easily. But yes, Burlington Arcade, which is just next door, again, was built by the Earl of Burlington. So the story goes that he basically wanted to stop people throwing rubbish over his wall of his mansion, Burlington House, which was becoming a bit of a problem. So he built this arcade of shops right next to the house, basically, which he hoped, and which is a very high-end series of shops. So it was 72 shops to begin with. It's got those, you can see in the photo, on the upper level, it had accommodation where the shopkeepers lived and that kind of thing. And actually, as time went on, it got a bit of a reputation for prostitution, those top levels, apparently. So it didn't quite go to plan with the...
You know, I found that locations like this one, you know, small alleys, you know, places that you can live nearby, prostitution finds the way to those places really quickly.
It does.
Especially like, I suppose you know that, but the Tower Bridge, the upper floor, people didn't use it because prostitutes were there. You know, if you go there, you most likely would get mugged, and people just didn't use it. It's crazy.
Upper floors were popular.
Yeah.
Go on. I was going to say that something else interesting about Burlington Arcade is that it had one of the earliest sort of private police forces, or maybe police force is the wrong word, but it, and they're still there today. So they're known as the Beadles, and you'll still see them. They're enforcing the rules today. So there's some quite funny rules. So you're not allowed to whistle, apparently. No whistling in Burlington Arcade. No hurrying. I don't know what constitutes a hurry or, at what point does a walk become a hurry? I don't know. but you'll see them there today in their uniforms.
So they have different uniforms.
Yeah, they have their own specific uniform. Yeah, they're called the Beadles. If you type in Burlington Beadles, you'll get a picture of them.
It's crazy how some traditions like this one are kept over time.
Yeah.
How do you
feel like that's a particularly good thing about London? People like clinging on to traditions. There you go. Very ornate outfits with their top hats and things.
Crazy. To be fair, they don't look like policemen. They look like concierge or something. Or
yeah, maybe. Policeman probably gives you the wrong image of what they look like. Yeah, well, more like someone at a hotel.
Face control. Or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so hold on. How do you get there? Is that so? You need to go in that square, or you don't need to go?
No, you don't need to go in the square. So if you're facing the front of the RA or Burlington House, it's just on the left.
Okay, I'll visit that place next time, because the only reason I've been passing by this place is because my wife likes to go to Fortman and Mason's. And we're just passing by, and I just want to get away as soon as possible. I don't want to stay much there.
Yeah. Fortnum & Mason is also a Georgian, was set up in the Georgian period, I believe.
It's a nice shop, to be fair, inside. It's a really good setup.
Oh, it's amazing, yeah. Mm. I'm not that into being inside shops generally, but I can spend a bit of time in Fortnum & Mason's very easily. And buy the occasional jam or something.
Yeah, of course.
Something affordable.
And what is this? What is this building, by the way, today? The Burlington House.
Burlington. So it's mainly where the RA is, the Royal Academy. So they put on art exhibitions.
Okay.
And other exhibitions, I guess. Yeah.
Oh, that's why I keep keep seeing some signs. Probably signs of.
They've got lots of flags and things like that outside for the RA.
Okay. All right. Well, that was interesting. Now I know. Now I know. Next time, I'm just gonna be. I'm just gonna peel my eyes more. It's like, okay, look, and I'm gonna go to that arcade. All right.
You'll think about our chat.
Yes, I will definitely. Okay. What's next on the list?
So next on the list, this is a bit of a classic kind of London hidden gem, Pickering Place.
Pickering Place. This
Pickering Place in St James's. So it's London's smallest square.
Smallest public square, smallest street.
We love smallest, biggest, oldest, that kind of thing. And it's actually it's a kind of a quite a magical spot, I'd say. So you walk through, if you can get a picture of the entrance. That would be good because it's next to Berry Bros and Rudd, which is one of the oldest shops in London. They've been operating since the 17th century, a wooden sort of facade that looks very old and is very old. And you walk down this dark, narrow passageway. Yeah. So this is, you're kind of standing at the entrance here, and then you walk down this dark passageway and you come out into this lovely Georgian square. So it's got the classic sort of Georgian architecture in the houses. It's got some original gas lighting as well. So you get this amazing sort of atmosphere there, I'd say. It's kind of a little Georgian time capsule is what it feels like.
Okay. Is there anything? So it's this really tiny square, by the way. Somebody lives over there?
That's a good question. I don't know whether there's a restaurant in there. So if you went in COVID times, obviously it would probably be completely deserted. But if you go there now, there's usually lots of little tables set up in there. I can't remember the name of the restaurant, but apparently it's meant to be nice. And there you go. There's some tables. So actually in the Georgian period, because it was quite a secluded spot, it was quite notorious really for gambling dens and brothels again, and as a spot for dueling, funnily enough, which is hard to believe considering its size. I don't know whether they dueled with swords or something, I don't know, and it's actually where London's, or supposedly where London's final duel was fought, is what the legend is.
Is it because it is quite hidden?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it was a good place to get up to no good, basically, because it's quite tucked away. But you wouldn't guess that now if you walk there, because it's very tranquil and lovely and beautiful. You wouldn't guess that it was a den of destitution back in the Georgian period.
No. Oh, look, I found the entrance. That's what you're talking
about.
There's
the entrance, yeah. You need to look out for that.
Yeah, you just walk on the street, you will never guess.
You would, unless you know that there's something interesting down there, you wouldn't know, but you've got to be curious.
Yeah, you're going to be curious because your first guess initially would be like, oh, private property, someone's private property, you know, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but
it's always best to try your luck.
Oh, man. Yeah. So in the past, basically, the more hidden place you've got, the more money you make.
There you go. Berry Bros and Rudd, they're a very old wine merchant, so apparently they do tours as well. They've got amazing sort of cellars and stuff like that, so I'm gonna hopefully try and go on one of them soon. I need to look it up, but that was one of my things that I said during lockdown that I would make sure I booked.
I see you going on tours even now. I see you're being constantly curious, learning new things. I love it, by the way. By the way, congratulations on reaching 20,000 on Instagram, or even surpassed that, didn't you?
Yeah, I've surpassed that now. But it's amazing. I'm very surprised, but it's lovely that everyone's enjoying the stuff that I'm putting out. I didn't think I'd get 20 followers when I started, let alone 20,000.
You're doing a great job. Just keep going.
Thank you. And there's actually one, I mean, not related to the Georgian period, but there's one other little interesting thing to try and spot in Pickering Place. Just as you go in on the right, there's a plaque that says that essentially the old Texan embassy used to be based there. So before Texas was a part of the USA, they had a legation, it was called. So not officially an embassy, but essentially an embassy. And it was based in Pickering Place. There's a little gold plaque you need to look out for. Another little sort of nugget of history there.
So hold on, before Texas was part of USA?
They had, yeah, before Texas was part of the USA, they had their own representative in London.
Oh,
and they were based in Pickering Place.
Okay, I understand now. Look at that. And by the way, for everybody who's listening, so Pickering Place is really close to St. James's Palace. So it's quite central as well.
Yeah, really, really close to St. James's Palace. Mm-hmm. On to the last one.
On to the last one. What do you have for us?
So the last one I have, it's kind of an area, the area of Spitalfields, which obviously is very well known, but specifically sort of Fournier Street. There's a few streets really that have these amazingly beautiful rows of Georgian houses, terraces of Georgian houses. Fournier Street, Elder Street is another one, Princelet Street. And these were built by French Huguenot weavers that immigrated over to London towards the end of the 17th century. So they were Protestants and they were fleeing religious persecution in France. And London was a beacon for Protestant refugees, essentially a safe haven for them. So towards the end of the 17th century, lots of French Huguenots came over to London and they settled in Soho, but predominantly in Spitalfields. And they were very successful, really. They brought these new sort of weaving skills with them, and they all sort of pretty much set up successful businesses, and they had a real hub in Spitalfields. By 1700, there were 9 Huguenot churches there, just to give an indication of the sort of size of the community. And with their wealth, they built these beautiful houses. And another, something to spot with them, basically, is which is, I think, fairly unusual for a Georgian house, is that they have attics with large windows. So if you're walking along Fournier Street in Spitalfields, you need to look up at the attics, because this is where the Huguenot weavers would have their looms. And so they needed a nice lot of light coming in. So they had large windows installed.
Okay. I think you used a couple of words that I didn't understand. Maybe if you try to paraphrase that. First of all, what was the name of the street again?
Fournier Street. So Fournier. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. I think I am.
Fournier. Is that what you mean? Fournier?
Fournier.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what about the windows again? So what about the windows again?
So they had, in their attics, they would have their looms for weaving, these large looms, and they needed a nice lot of light coming in so they could see what they were doing.
Oh, okay.
So what's quite unusual for a Georgian house is that they've got these big attics with windows. So that's how you can kind of spot the difference between a Georgian terrace in, you know, sort of Bloomsbury or something, compared with a Georgian terrace in Spitalfield. So you can kind of see the attics up the top there with the windows.
Mm-hmm. I see what you mean now.
Lovely buildings.
I see what you mean now. Okay, I understand. Oh, so basically walk around. You will basically not, you know, pay attention to that usually, you know, whoever walks. But what are these buildings now? Are they just apartment blocks now? What is this?
They're probably they seem to mostly still be houses, as far as I can tell. I mean, I don't notice many sort of even many sort of flat bells and things like that. So maybe quite a lot of them are still single properties. That might be completely wrong, but they seem to be still very residential. Yeah.
Speaking of speed of hell, I mean, I cannot just not ask you about the market, because the market is the, you know, probably main thing over there. But there is a goat over there. What is the goat?
Yes, I know what you mean.
Do you know why this goat is over there, and why a goat?
I don't.
Don't pressure if you don't. Don't pressure.
I've definitely read about it, but I can't remember why it's a goat. It's something to do with the immigrant populations in Spitalfields. Spitalfields has essentially always been a first port of call in London for immigrant groups. So it sort of started with the French Huguenots in the 17th century. In the 19th century, you had the Irish population coming over when they had the potato famine in Ireland, and a big Irish population settled in Spitalfields. You had a big Jewish population in and still do have a big Jewish population in Spitalfields. And it's something related to immigration, but that's as far as I know.
I remember I read something in the past, but it just didn't grab my attention. I think it's not that they were trading goats, but it's more like a symbol of something. Anyway, a homework for both of us.
I'll do a bit of research and I will send you a message.
All right. Well, thanks so much. Anything else to add? Or because, to be fair, the $2, you gave a 5+1. No pressure if you don't have an extra one.
5+1. Do you want an extra one?
Oh, if you have something prepared, yeah. No, but if not, no problem at all.
Let me think. I mean, if you're to throw in a church.
Okay.
If you'd like a church, for a bit of variety, is St. Martin in the Fields on Trafalgar Square. So again, that was built in the 1720s, between 1722 and 26, again by a neoclassicist, James Gibbs. And so if you look at it, it basically looks like a Roman temple.
It does,
And obviously it's in Trafalgar Square, so a tourist hotspot. Mm. So if you're ever, if there's anyone listening who's going to be coming to London hopefully soon, then you can look out for the Georgian architecture of St. Martin in the Fields.
I really love this church because, as you say, it's a central location. They have quite often some events, people are singing or playing music over there, and you can just visit these events. Every time I went there, the events were for free. And there is even some catacombs, or I don't know how you call it, but underneath there's a restaurant.
Cafe in the Crypt, I think it's called, unless that's somewhere else. Yeah.
Yes, and it's and again, you just get teleported in a different era.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Man.
So there we go. An extra one for you.
Yeah, 5+1. You did it. All right. Well, thank you so much. Do you have any final words?
Any final words? Not today. No.
Not today.
I can't think of anything.
No worry. I just love putting people on the spot. I don't know why. Maybe I should change.
You asked me that last time. I can't remember what I said.
That's all right. Well, Jack, thanks so much for joining us once again. Thanks so much for sharing your knowledge. And I wish you a fantastic day.
Thank you. And you.
And that's a wrap for yet another travel episode. Thank you so much for listening to the whole thing. If you have listened that on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review. That will mean a lot to me. Also, if you have a friend, a cousin, or a teacher, or anybody else who you think will be suitable for this series, please connect us and let's make this happen. Thanks so much once again. I wish you a fantastic day.